Compass and Clock. I'm your host, Mary Copeland. This infotainment podcast explores how to live your best life now and well into retirement. We'll discuss topics in financial planning, housing, and insurance. We'll talk wellness, relationships, and leisure activities. A full active life requires planning for your goals and preparing for the unexpected. I'll introduce you to a variety of guests, from knowledgeable experts to folks sharing stories of their life experiences and so much more, because life is big. All is intended to help guide you in planning for what you need now and at any age. Like and subscribe so you don't miss a thing. Today, my guest is Laurel Moulton. Laurel coordinates the Master Gardener Program for Clallam County and is a regional horticulture specialist for the WSU Regional Small Farms Program that serves Clallam, Jefferson, and Kitsap counties. She has 25 years of experience working in the botanical, horticulture, and entomology fields. Today, Laurel and I are going to talk about what time of year to buy certain plants and vegetables and how to care for them. Laurel, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Mary. I'm happy to be here.
So I've had the pleasure of hearing you speak before. You actually did a presentation for us on Compass Points, and spring is sprung, and I just thought it would be great to do a podcast with you so we can share your expertise with so many others. So my first question for you, as I said, since we're in May, are what types of flowers can someone buy for the outdoor hanging baskets and planters right now?
Yeah, this is the time of year when everybody's got spring fever and all those flowers are gorgeous and showing up at the nurseries. So if you're thinking hanging baskets, you've got a lot of choices, but you want to make sure that you know you pay attention to where your basket is going to be, shade or sun or, you know, partial shade, something like that. If you're doing shade, I would go for fuchsias. They're gorgeous and they hang really well. Hummingbirds love them. You can also do lobelia, coleus, and begonias. If you're doing something in the sun, you have more options, and it's kind of fun to get different heights and hanging and clumping in there. So you can try petunias. There's ivy geraniums and upright geraniums, calibrachoa, alyssum, lobelia, verbena, and all sorts of other things. But one thing I'd caution is, just because it's in the nursery now doesn't mean that it's safe to go outside right away. So just pay attention to taking the plants directly out of a greenhouse and putting them right in the sun, or buying plants, you know, right when they get into the nursery, because oftentimes there's things for sale because people know that you're going to buy them, even if it's not the right time of year.
Okay. So if we stay on this theme for a moment, what about vegetables and herbs? What can somebody be starting with right now in May in that arena?
Yeah, there's so much you can do in the vegetable garden right now. The weather's still cool, so it's still great for greens. If you're interested in doing squash or cucumbers, it's about time where you could start planting squash seeds outside, but cucumbers, you still want to start inside and put those out closer to June. You can start putting your beans out. For some of the pole beans and the bush beans, you could wait a little bit longer until June. These are warm weather crops, and so if you put them out too early, you're just not going to get good results. You can do cabbage and broccoli. You can plant beets and carrots. And you can even put your tomatoes out, but make sure you keep them covered for a while.
What do you mean by covered?
Well, tomatoes and peppers and eggplants, things like that, are really tropical plants. And so right now in Western Washington, in most places, it depends on your microclimate. It's just a little bit too cool for them. You can put them out, but usually they'll just kind of sit there. If we get a cold snap, they could rot. So it helps to put a cloche over them. It could be a floating row cover. It could be a plastic hoop. It could even be a water jug with the, you know, those office water jugs with the bottom cut out. Those are all good options. Of course, a greenhouse works well too.
Okay. And in the hanging baskets and flowers, you were talking about cautioning how soon to put them out and the vegetables and herbs. You and I were having a conversation about how do you even know which are the right ones to buy? You know, just because something's on sale might not necessarily mean that that's the right plant for you. So do you have any rule of thumb to help us with, like educate us on how to actually shop for these vegetables, herbs, flowers, etc.?
Yeah. Well, first of all, experimenting is great with gardening. I mean, that's where I learn the most. So in some cases, why not just buy it and try it and see what happens? But it does help to buy your plants from a nursery that, you know, they specialize in plants. You know, there's oftentimes grocery stores or pharmacies or hardware stores that have plants, and they may not have the expertise. So if you shop at a local nursery, you'll have somebody to ask and get recommendations there. Oftentimes nurseries will even put up signs, you know, if it's too early for their flowers that go in baskets and containers to be outside, oftentimes they'll keep them in the greenhouse. That's why they look so gorgeous right now, because they've had that extra heat. So they may have a sign that says, hey, wait a couple weeks to put these outside or keep these protected.
Okay. And I was going to ask you about the warmer weather now, as we're getting into warmer weather here in the Northwest, which is where we are doing this recording. How do you keep our plants alive and thriving? Because, you know, as the temperatures go up, everybody might tend to overwater them. So what are your rules of thumb there for, you know, keeping our plants looking beautiful and healthy?
Yeah, water is a big issue with plants. In the early season, when it's cool, it's really easy to overwater things because, you know, we just put our babies in the ground or in a pot, and you want to take care of them. So to keep them thriving through the summer, you just have to, you know, acknowledge that these plants are getting bigger and the water's getting warmer. As the plants get bigger, they have more root mass and they need more water. So when it's cool out, hang back with the water. As it starts warming up, your plants will talk to you. If they wilt a little bit, you know it's time to give them water. If you put them in a container that's too small, you'll have to water them more often, twice a day or more. If you have a hanging basket, one of the tricks of the trade is reaching up and trying to lift up the basket. And if it feels a little bit light, that's a good time to water. Watering early in the morning is always the best because you have the least evaporation going, but be conscientious with your watering. We're certainly not getting more water on this planet. The times are getting hotter, and we really need to be conserving. So in addition to paying attention when your plants are starting to droop, or if they're feeling lightweight, you can also stick your finger in the soil. If it's dry in the top inch or two, it's about time to water.
Okay, so in addition to watering to keep them alive and thriving, do you have any home remedies? Like one of the things you just said is the size of the pot, you know, so should somebody, if they're buying starters at the nursery, what kind of soil should they be using? Is there different soils for flowers versus herbs, etc.?
Yeah. Soil actually is very important in containers. You don't want to just go get garden soil out of your garden, because when something's in a container, it's an artificial environment and it's very important to have good drainage. It's also kind of important to have a lightweight media, particularly if your basket or your container is hanging up. So any of the potting soils that are sold in the store, they typically have perlite, which helps with air spaces and drainage. And then they'll have organic material in there, and those are great for containers. Those potting soils often also already contain fertilizers, so pay attention to that. Read the ingredients. You know, some potting soil will say it has, you know, kind of conventional fertilizer in it, or some of it will say it has bat guano or feather meal. All those things are fertilizers. So you'll get a good start with that potting soil, but you need to keep an eye on your plants through the season. And if they start getting yellow or they're not growing, you know, as lushly as you'd like, you might try a little bit of liquid fertilizer. The other thing you just brought up is the container size. A mistake that a lot of people make when they're new at this is buying containers that are too small. When you plant a container in a pot, that soil that's in the pot is all that plant has to keep it alive, to hold water, to hold nutrients, and give it what it needs. You're going to be a lot happier if you choose a bigger container. You know, if your container is too small, you're going to be watering it twice or more times per day and struggling to keep it looking good. Also, your plants will get, their size depends on the size of the container too. So if you put it in a container that's ultimately too small, your plant won't get as big. Your containers won't spill over and be as lush as if you had more media for them to feed on.
Are there different types of containers that you recommend for flowers versus vegetables and herbs? And do they all get the same soil, a vegetable and herb versus flowers?
Yeah, in a container, using the same soil is just fine for vegetables and for herbs. I'm glad you brought up vegetables and herbs, because if you're doing a container garden, it's really fun to add something edible in it. So, you know, if you're doing a display container and you've got petunias spilling over the side and some alyssum, why not stick a tomato in the middle of it? You know, that's kind of, you know, try something new. Vegetables and herbs don't just need to go in the vegetable garden. There's certain herbs that do well in a containers, but won't play well with other plants. Often when folks start an herb garden, they want to put oregano and mint, things like that in with their vegetables. Those two plants in particular are kind of beasts. So those are better off on their own. They spread and spread and spread.
So that was oregano and?
Oregano and mint. Mint in particular, because it's got the underground stems that just take off. I see folks when they make vegetable gardens too, you know, people want a corner with herbs, and you'll almost always regret putting mint in your vegetable garden. That's a good one to keep in a pot somewhere else.
We have herbs in pots also. We have oregano, and they're all in their own pots. Oregano, spearmint, rosemary, sage. My husband does have also in pots tomatoes and peppers, but the strawberries are in the ground and they spread. Those, you know, you have to designate an area because they really seem like they're spreaders.
Yeah, there's certain strawberries that do have runners and other ones don't. I think it's the June bearing ones. You caught me off guard a little bit there. I'm pretty sure it's the June bearing ones, but they send out runners and put out new plants. And so in order to keep those patches healthy, you can use the runners to fill in gaps in your strawberry patch. But otherwise, you need to keep the spacing reasonable so you don't start getting an overcrowded patch that will lead to fungal diseases and fewer fruit.
So as people are starting their gardens now, whether it's floral, vegetable, herbs, strawberries, etc., I'm losing my train of thought here because we have deer. So do you have tips for people on how, you know, that now that they've put all this time and energy into it and an investment, how to keep predators away from it, whether it's slugs or deer, et cetera?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question. With deer, flat out, your best option is a tall fence. Make sure your fence is, we recommend 8 feet tall, but if you have an ordinance in your city that says you can't have a fence taller than six feet, you can also, you know, put a string up above the fence to add a couple more feet to deter them from going over. You also have to make sure that there's not a gap under the fence because they'll just squeeze right under. I've had that happen before. There's products out there that are supposed to deter deer. If they smell bad, they're made out of rotten eggs and, you know, cougar urine and things like that. Those people have some success with, but they wash off. They're expensive. You have to keep reapplying them and reapplying them. And we live in a pretty wet climate. So I'll just say the fence is the best. for slugs, there's other options. You don't need a fence for those. You know, some people say that you can put a copper strip on the side of your raised bed and they won't like crawling over it. But it once that gets a little bit of patina on it, they can crawl right over it. So I would stick with, there's some options like you can get slug bait that has iron phosphate as the active ingredient. That is the one that's safe for wildlife and pets. The ones that have metaldehyde are, you shouldn't use around pets. You can also, use beer if you just have a little, you know, a tuna can or a little plastic container, sink it into the ground, not quite, don't have it right level with the ground because then you'll get beetles and other things falling in there that you don't want to kill. But slugs are attracted to beer, and a friend of mine did an experiment with cheap beer and expensive beer, and they are definitely a cheap date. So, so don't spend too much money. They're attracted to the yeasty smell and they'll just, you know, crawl right in and drink themselves to death. So, you'll have to clean those out if it rains or if you have sprinklers. Another option, if you're not too squeamish, is give them a hiding place, like, you know, put a board down on the surface of the soil, and as the daylight comes, they'll go under there and hide, so you know where they all are, so you can flip it over and make quick work of them with your, you know, with your trowel or your pruning shears or something like that. So
My husband has definitely tried the beer before, and I'll let him know to stick with the cheap beer. He doesn't have to buy the 6-pack of IPA. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, if he wants to drink it too, you
sure.
know,
you know, but you need a Dixie cup worth or whatever. So,
yeah.
When I grew up, it was on Long Island in New York, and my parents had garden beds, and they definitely had azaleas and rhododendrons. And here in the Washington area, rhodies are really big. Mm-hmm. So, my next question for you is, what's the difference between an annual and a perennial? Because I've heard those terms before.
Okay, so an annual plant is a plant, well, it's kind of complicated, but I'll give you the simple answer. An annual is a plant that goes through its whole life cycle in 1 year, from germinating all the way to setting seed, and then it dies after it does that. Although we like plants for, you know, something pretty to look at, the real function of plants is just to produce more seeds. So an annual does that in 1 year. The complicating thing is that a lot of plants that are sold as annuals here are actually perennials in much warmer places. An interesting example is a tomato. You'd never think those were perennial, but they are in tropical areas. Here we treat them as annuals, so they won't live more than a year here unless you have a fantastic greenhouse. So annuals, just 1 year, perennials, those are something that you can expect will live for multiple years. There's some perennials that are longer lived, like rhododendrons can live for decades, whereas there's other more tender perennials, like, let's see, artichokes, for example, we say those typically last about 5 years. They can last a little bit longer, but they're shorter lived perennials.
So perennials come back.
Yes.
You can plant rhodies and azaleas and they come back each season in the spring, for instance, or whatever time of year they come back.
Yeah, that's another differentiation that's important. There's herbaceous perennials, and those oftentimes will die back to the ground and come back from the crown. And then there's woody perennials, like shrubs, like azaleas and rhododendrons. And those are, you know, also evergreen. Well, I guess some azaleas are deciduous. But yeah, there's woody perennials and herbaceous perennials.
Okay. I think I have time for one more question for you. So can you talk to us about fall, winter vegetable gardens? What is the best for that time of year and when do you start them?
Sure. I love talking about winter vegetable gardens because here in the Pacific Northwest, we have this, even though we don't have a lot of heat, we do have a really mild climate, so we can grow things year round. But the mistake that most of us make when we start thinking about winter vegetable gardening is we think, oh, okay, well, I can just plant it in the winter, or plant it in October. But for the most productive winter and spring vegetable garden, you need to start in the summer. So there's certain things like leeks that you'll plant in June, expecting to get a harvest next spring. For things like broccoli and Brussels sprouts, and things like that, you'll want to put transplants in the ground in July and August. And there's certain coal plants like cauliflower that you can even put in as late as October. I just went to a friend's garden and he had these gorgeous heads of cauliflower right now that he could harvest. You know, when everybody else is thinking, oh, it's time to start the vegetable garden. And he said, well, I put in those starts in October. And so just think about that, broaden your horizons, try to experiment. And if you need a guide for this Pacific Northwest region, my favorite chart is one that West Coast Seeds offers. It's a seed company in British Columbia. So if you go to their website and you look up their planting charts, you'll find a winter planting chart, and that's really good to get you going.
Oh, good tip.
Yeah.
Well, you are a wealth of information, and I'm sure we can keep talking more and more. So maybe we'll have to do another podcast or two. But for today, I want to thank you, Laurel, for all the wonderful gardening tips for myself and our listeners. And thanks for sharing them with us. And do you want to share your contact information, the best way that people can reach out to you should they have questions, your website or something, or a phone number?
Sure. You can reach the Clallam County Master Gardeners at extension.wsu.edu/Clallam and look for the Master Gardener link. You can send plant questions to plantclinic.clallam@gmail.com to reach our clinicians. I can be reached at laurel.moulton, M-O-U-L-T-O-N, at wsu.edu.
Great. Thank you so much, Laurel. And to our listeners, thank you for spending another 20 minutes or so with us, and we'll have a new episode for you next week. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for having me.
It was a pleasure.